The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Today is a national holiday in my view, not Valentine's Day, all right? By the way, Valentine's Day, I think, is one of the biggest ripoffs during the calendar year. The Sessmatts, I mean, if I show up with flowers and candy this afternoon, the flowers die, the candy gets eaten. That's it. If you're not doing Valentine's Day year-round in your marriage, in your relationship, I'm not sitting here being Dr. Phil or anything, but it might help. You know, treat every day as Valentine's Day, or every other day, or every third day, not just February 14th. Now, today's national holiday is quite simply the pitchers and catchers for the Diamondbacks reported today. Doesn't mean I don't pay attention to other teams around the Valley or across baseball. But today is pitchers and catchers reporting. They are out on the field right now. Haley and Jordan are down. We should have, Eric, thought about putting them on. He's throwing the ball really hard right now. It looks really good. He looks really fast. No, what we want to hear is this guy looks like a toad. Like all he's done is drank like a fish this offseason. That's what we want. We want to know the guys that don't look good at all. Remember an opening day of pitchers and catchers when it would be Randy and Kurt? And the world of sports would just flat stop. Doesn't mean it's not the same with Zach and Robbie, although I'd prefer to not have Zach here myself. But today is the national holiday of pitchers and catchers. We'll get into that. We're going to talk about Johnny Manziel and the Arizona Cardinals today. We're going to talk about the U of A ASU game tomorrow night and a little bit of gamesmanship. We'll talk with Matt Muehlbach. I'll get into the gamesmanship. And it is Wednesday, so we have Talk to the Lopes. Andy Stankiewicz is with us this week. GCU Baseball opens up Brazel Field this coming Friday against TCU. And the Lopes open up their season. They're trying to get it in the NCAAs. I always like talking to Andy. That is coming up at just after 11 o'clock. Some of what is on my mind now in the world of sports brought to you by Sagicor Now. Guys, protect what matters most. I bring it up every show for a reason. Sagicor Now, because you've got to protect your family with life insurance. Have you checked into life insurance lately? You need to do so. It's very simple. Log on to sagicornow.com. Just go to our website. You can see the Sagicor ads there. Click on them. Go to sports360az.com. There's Sagicor Now. Just type it in your browser while you're watching me. Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Right, I think the story of the day, there's a few stories in my week. Actually, it's quite a bit today here locally. It is the opening of pitchers and catchers and the Diamondbacks. And I think it's a good day for Arizona because J.D. Martinez has yet to sign. Now, I could be sitting here and Eric can tell me and just jump on in here in the next, I don't know, whenever you feel like in the show and say J.D. Martinez just showed up in Fort Myers, Florida at the Red Sox camp. Or J.D. Martinez showed up at the Diamondbacks complex. I think it's very good news for the Diamondbacks that we've come all the way through the offseason and J.D. Martinez has yet to sign. The forces at nature have been the agent set the bar at an extraordinarily high number. And if you've noticed, the baseball free agent market has been depressed, compressed, whatever term you want to use. If it is owners saying we're going to collude and not go pay players the rate that they believe they deserve, or a guy like Scott Boras, we're just going to break his back, and J.D. Martinez happened to be in the middle of it all, then it's a benefit for the Diamondbacks. I've only talked to J.D. Martinez a handful of times. I can't say for certain on this, but the people that have talked with him often that are not employees of the Diamondbacks. I got to be clear on this because employees of the Diamondbacks just make it seem like, well, of course he's coming back here. No, these are people whose opinions I trust. J.D. Martinez is not a big market Boston type of guy. Like when the Red Sox play the Yankees in those four-hour snooze fests on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball, and they're analyzing every last bit of J.D. Martinez versus the Diamondbacks would be lucky to get one or two games on Sunday Night Baseball this year. That's just the way it is with them. And that he's more of a market where there's not the white-hot glare. And that he himself would rather be here in Arizona than in the glare of Boston. But if you're trusting your agent, and if the dollars are enough to go one way or the other, you would hope that the ball player, and I always say this, when I'm in my 20s, in my 30s, I'm thinking, you know, the team is telling him, and he should really listen to his agent. And I start getting in my 40s, like, what am I talking about? You don't have to do what the agent says. The agent is working for you. You're not working for the agent. One. Two, be your own man. This is not as complicated as it used to be. Agents were put in place because all these owners are bad guys. And you don't know what the guy next to you is making. Well, that's changed in 30 years of doing this. You can go online and see immediately what the guy next to you is in the locker next to you is making. You know what the market value is. You know what the lay of the land is in the outfield in Boston. You know what the lay of the land is of players coming up through the farm system. Any player, I think, in this day and age in sports, and the agents that are watching this right now are saying, I'm just full of it. But I really believe that the whole idea of having an agent anymore as a professional athlete is completely overrated. In certain sports, you know what the salary slot is. So why are you even paying somebody to get you signed when you know what the number is? It's crazy. So in JD Martinez's case, is he better off betting that, you know, I didn't get the 15, 20, 25 million that I thought. Maybe I am going to get 15. Maybe I'm going to get 12 and a half. I don't know. But if I'm going to get 12 and a half in Arizona and hang out for a year and have Paul Goldschmidt in the same lineup as myself, then maybe I should just accept that number. If the team isn't good, I'm going to get traded because I'm in a spot, much like last year, Detroit, where my contract is expiring. If I kill it and things go well, I can stay in Arizona. Why wouldn't I want to stay in Arizona? And so I think it's very good news for the Diamondbacks. It's sitting here on opening day of spring training that he has yet to sign. Now, again, I could be sitting here in the next 10 minutes, the next 10 hours, whatever, the next week or so, and JD Martinez could decide to go to Boston. The fact he hasn't already done it, to me, is a good sign for the Diamondbacks. That's all I'm simply saying here. And Fort Myers, I don't know. Eric, you ever been to Fort Myers? Been down to Florida in that area? You ever been to the Grapefruit Circuit?
No.
Man, rides are forever down
there. I heard
there.
It's not the best setup compared to what we have at the Cactus League here in Arizona,
no.
Where every stadium is within an hour of one another. And they're all in big cities. In Florida, you get these little rinky-dink towns that some of these teams train in. So.
Yeah, I don't see... look... to me, everything points towards him coming back here, except the dollar figure, except the one thing that does it really, at the end of the day, does it really matter for him?
It shouldn't.
But if he's come through this whole offseason, he's come through like 100 days of this whole free agent thing, and he still hasn't gone someplace, doesn't it kind of, it just sounds to me like, not kind of, it sounds to me, reads to me like, I am trusting my agent with this rather than him saying, hey, Scott, yeah, it's JD. Yeah, I want to go to Arizona, make the deal happen. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
I mean, he's not the only one. Jake Arrieta still hasn't signed with anyone either.
No, right.
And here we are, pitchers and catchers reporting. Last time I checked, Jake Arrieta was a pitcher.
Yeah.
But he has no team as of right now.
I saw where Dave, did you see this about Dave Stewart?
I did not.
So Dave Stewart, the former Diamondbacks GM, I'm bringing this up simply because it's a little bit more baseball and it speaks to what we were saying on this show, like, I don't know, a couple months into his tenure as GM. He didn't want to be a GM. He was an agent. His wife is holding down the agency. Today, Dave Stewart shows up over at the A's facility in Mesa, and he's going to work with pitchers for 4 days. Of course he is. He's not gone back into being an agent. Some guys figure it out. The unfortunate part for the Diamondbacks. And I bring this up because there's a reason when these teams go through dark places, we immediately want to forget about it and instantly in our business become cheerleaders. We do. There's many of us that want to just make sure there's a winning team because it's a lot easier to cover a winning team. It's a lot easier to go in the TV side and convince the resources in the news desk that we need to be at the game tonight. When the team is 20 games out, they're going to say no. And so if there's a great story, forget it. If you're a writer, you're only being based off of page clicks on a story. That's your only metric of success. Team stinks. They're not going to read you as much. Doesn't matter how it's spun. And so we get this, and then there's all these partnerships and intertangling of one business leads to another. And so you have teams that aren't really being held accountable by media like they should. And so I am one that will bring up mistakes from the past because you learn from those. At least you hope you learn from those. I think as the Diamondbacks open up camp today, because the Martinez thing is still sitting there, you still have to give them somewhat of an incomplete for their offseason because you just don't know. That's an enormous piece. I don't know what's going to happen at second base or shortstop. I know we all make these predictions when the season opens up. And when camp opens up, we make all these predictions. And what we don't take into account is who's going to get injured, who's going to get traded. So it's awful. It's a lot of fun when people say, hey, Brad, what do you think of the Diamondbacks this year? I don't know. I think on the surface, they should be pretty good. On the surface. But they still have a lot of questions here in the next few weeks to address before they even get to opening day. And they've got the 800-pound gorilla in the room, a couple of them, of what is going to happen with Paul Goldschmidt and his future and his contract. You cannot sit here for another year and say, well, we don't have to get around and address that for another couple of years. You don't have to. You can't do that. You have to do something with Goldschmidt's deal or move him. That's going to happen. Either you get something done here in the next, I'd say, calendar year, or he's going to be gone. Zach Greinke, I think you've got to get him out of here because it impacts Goldschmidt. So this is not an easy fit here for the Diamondbacks. It's just not. This is not a simple, easy camp. You can get rid of $33 million in one trade with Greinke, and then you can go back to Goldschmidt and say, we've underpaid you for a long period of time. I mean, there's just a lot there. All right, Johnny Manziel and the Cardinals. I guess I've got to work the Suns in on today's show. It's the halfway mark of the season after tonight's loss at Utah. And there's a really cool story involving a USA keeper in town tonight. I'll get to that, and ASU U of A. Some notes around that game as well. We'll have Matt Muehlbach here at 10:35, former U of A guard, Pac-12 network analyst. What I like about Matt is you can't tell that he's a U of A honk, because he's not. He's very straightforward. We'll have that, and then Andy Stankiewicz, Talk to the Lopes. On a Wednesday, I'm Brad Sussmat. So Monday night, I was watching the Johnny Manziel stuff break. I was off yesterday at a funeral. Thanks again to Haley and Jordan for doing the show. The Manziel stuff that came out on Monday felt to me very much like a PR campaign of trying to do damage control. And it happens all the time. Go hire a big agency. They're going to put you in places where they soften your image, where they're going to make sure that you're on the morning shows, where it's a pretty friendly audience for the most part and pretty friendly interviewing. There's occasional teeth that is shown, but they're going to put them in the soft sweater and the nice look and make sure that people are like, oh, he seems like a really nice guy. And that's part of the process. So Johnny Manziel went on this PR run on Monday. He did speak with ABC about his bipolar disorder. I'm bringing all this up because if you're the Arizona Cardinals, you are in the business of kicking the tires on every single last player. It doesn't mean you're going to sign them. This morning, Johnny Manziel signed a contract to play football. I will tell you where he signed after we get through this and talk a little bit further. But here's Johnny Manziel, for context sake, of part of his interview on Monday doing the circuit on his wanting to come back.
Is the goal of this comeback to get back into the NFL ultimately?
That's the end goal, 100%.
You have to tell me, are you still drinking?
No.
Not drinking at all?
I'm not, because here's the way I look at it. Going back throughout the last couple years of my life, I was self-medicating with alcohol. Like, that's what I thought was making me happy and helped me get out of that depression to a point of where I felt like I had some sense of happiness. But at the end of the day, you're left staring at the ceiling by yourself and you're back in that depression and back in that hole, that dark hole of sitting in a room by yourself, being super depressed, thinking about all the mistakes you've made in your life. What did that get me? Where did that get me except out of the NFL? Where did that get me disgraced? And I went a solid 5 months until I really fell back into like a little bit of a depression where I didn't drink, I didn't do anything, but still, you know, I was going to therapy and The difference that I know this year is I started taking a look at my mental health a little bit and making it a priority in my life, and Bree making it a priority in my life, to where I'm taking medication for bipolar, and I'm working to try and make sure that I don't fall back into any type of depression, because I know where that leads me and I know how slippery of a slope that is for me.
Okay, so there's a lot there to unpack. The first question is, your end goal to get back to the NFL? No, it's not. I don't want to play here. So let's just, of course it is. All of that that Johnny Manziel said about having bipolar and working through, is that a game changer in your mind to bring him back to the football field? Guys, if we're to think that there were not players, okay, that there weren't players 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that didn't have issues, that weren't brought out as they are now as we're sitting here in 2018, we would be naive on that. We just would. I remember when I was in my early 20s and I went into the Raiders locker room after a game. The Raiders played the Chargers, and my assignment was to go get Lyle Alzado and John Matuszak. Lyle Alzado and John Matuszak, after the game was over, two great warriors in some people's minds, in mine too, but I was there to get an interview with each one of them. Both of them were in this cramped little locker room at Jack Murphy Stadium, which was a dump then, and it's even dumpier now. There's not a football team there anymore. Both of them were standing there naked after the game was over, and both of their bodies were deformed. In the case of John Matuszak's, I remember that he looked like a human zit. He had pimples all over his body. In Lyle Alzado's case, he was deformed. In my view, physically, his butt was up around his neck. I don't think there's any other way to put it. And all the steroid stuff was not out there then. And we know that the story didn't end well for those two. So to think that there have not been issues of all sorts around sports, around the NFL, if we're going to just talk Johnny Manziel here, we would be kidding ourselves. Yeah, there are the quarterbacks that have come in and have had severe issues. Ryan Leaf is at the poster child, top of the list on that. And we all saw what happened, even though the general manager at the time that took him, Bobby Bethard, just made it into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It was one of the few times that Bobby missed. Steve Keim has shown that he is not afraid to take a chance. Everybody brings up Tyrann Mathieu. But were there red flags around Robert Kimdiche growing up? And to this point, Eric and I were talking about this morning. Robert Kimdiche is not in the same issue as Tyrann Mathieu. He just hasn't grown up. And in my mind, that was a risk pick by Steve Keim. You can't miss at quarterback, but at the same time, you can't sit here and go through a stretch where you have the Derek Andersons and the Max Halls. Kevin Cobb, although I think in Kevin Cobb's case, it was concussion related. They didn't have great success, but you cannot take a franchise and run them into the ground at quarterback and leave guys. If Larry Fitzgerald had good quarterbacking for that part of his career, who knows what his numbers would look like now? I mean, seriously, go look at those years. And if you were watching him play, he was about to get killed and decapitated. So if you were to take Johnny Manziel, Johnny Manziel is now trying to do the image rehab. Johnny Manziel this morning agreed to terms to play in the Spring League. What is the Spring League? Spring League is going to be games that are played April 7th and April 14th. The Spring League is a developmental football program for players to showcase their sets of skills to NFL scouts and general managers. At the same time, the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the CFO have the rights to Johnny Manziel. So there is time for Johnny Manziel to show what he can do. I am not sitting here today saying that this is the answer for the Arizona Cardinals. You can sit there and laugh and scoff, but in my space, I am one to turn over every last rock when it comes to acquiring football talent to the best of the ability. Has he bottomed out? Is the Johnny Manziel redemption story, redemption tour, strong enough for Steve Keim and the Cardinals to say, you know what, we're going to look at this. We're going to take a flyer on this. This isn't the only flyer that we're going to take. Somebody asked me this morning in the sports world, what do you think happens at the Cardinal quarterback position? What I would like to see happen versus what will happen are two different questions. What I would like to see happen is them draft somebody, try to move up from where they are in the draft, try to move up in the top 15, to the top 10, the top five, somewhere in that range, try to make a deal happen, and then go sign Josh McCown. It's pretty simple. I can tell you the guy I would like to have them sign. Josh McCown would tick off a lot of you, but I think some of you would get the fact that he is a great teammate. He would be a great mentor. I saw where Eli Manning was quoted this last week about, I'm not here to help others along. I'm paraphrasing. And Peyton was in the same case. Our buddy Brock Huard here on the show talked about that a little bit a few years back. I want somebody that's going to come in and mentor and show, and at the same time, be in a space where when he's out on the field, I feel as though he can win a game. So if it's Josh McCown and the Cardinals say, we are taking Josh Rosen, or we are taking Sam Darnold, or we are taking Josh Allen, even though I'm not the biggest guy on Josh Allen. I think everybody's making the Carson Wentz comparison on that. But do you look at Johnny Manziel and say, you know what, we are going to take a flyer on Johnny Manziel? Johnny Manziel is in his mid-20s. He's 25. Guy won a Heisman Trophy. That's not the end-all of end-alls, but you can't deny the talent that's there or was there. And if he plays in this league and he goes up to the CFL, are you looking at 2019 and saying this could be an option for us? Because the Cardinals are in the space that they are right now, is it an option for them sooner than later? Again, I'm not saying they're going to sign him. I'm just purely pointing out here that you've got to explore every last quarterback option that's out there. Because you can say, well, this guy's not good and this guy's great. And this guy, look at the quarterbacks that are on the field by the end of the year. In the NFL every year. It's the bottom of the barrel. It's guys that are barely hanging on in most cases because of the injuries. All right, ASU U of A, all things from Matt Muehlbach's point of view, Pac-12 network analyst. That is coming up next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona tonight. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. Haley is hosting tonight. Make sure that you check it out. All right, let's turn our attention to the ASU U of A basketball game tomorrow night. This game is in Tempe. I was in Tucson for the matchup earlier this year where DeAndre Ayton went absolutely nuts. To give us a better view of this game and much more, it's always good to hear Matt Muehlbach's voice, former U of A guard, now Pac-12 network analyst. How are you?
Brad, doing great. Doing great. Fired up for the game tomorrow.
Who's it a bigger game for in your view, ASU or U of A, Matt?
You know, I'd say it's pretty equal. You know, from a big picture standpoint, it's big for both. I mean, U of A, I think, has a team, at least personnel-wise, when you look at them because of Ayton, a guy like that, that, you know, you could talk about a Final Four team we've been talking about since November. You know, no one's talked about that, at least since November, for ASU. But on the other hand, from a big picture standpoint, you know, I think establishing themselves with Bobby Hurley and the rivalry and, you know, recruiting for the next couple years and, you know, winning at home. Obviously, the crowds have been great at the bank, as they're calling it now. So that's, you know, that's big. And, you know, again, from a rivalry standpoint, I think, you know, ASU had the great November, December, and, you know, it's been a little choppy since then. This would sort of validate. They haven't had the signature win. Obviously, the SC and UCLA wins were great this past week, but the U of A, I think, would kind of almost like bookend, you know, the earlier part of the year and validate what they've done. And so for both, it's big. And, you know, U of A, also, as I said, you know, looking, both teams are trying to figure out their seeding. So it's pretty compelling.
It is it's interesting in this matchup. You and I have seen it through the years. This is one of the few times where I would say both teams are in and squarely in the tournament in March. That is very seldom the case. It's usually Arizona State just trying to get into the NIT. But it's safe to say, from your view, I don't want to put words in your mouth, both teams are in. Yeah. These are two tournament teams that are playing tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think so. You're right. And I can't remember many times it's happened. I think, you know, I was not worried at all about ASU, you know, especially the first month of the conference. I got a little concerned. You know, I knew they were playing, you know, they had that. I thought one of the tougher games they had all year was they play Super Bowl Sunday you know, right before the Super Bowl, they had an extra day off, as the Pac-12 schedule goes, and had to play in Pullman, Washington, mm-hmm. you know, after the loss to Washington. And that's, you know, Washington State's a team that, you know, they're hungry, they're trying to get a couple wins, and not easy to play there. And, you know, they were tied up, I think, with 5 minutes to go. I was concerned. I would have been concerned if they had lost that one. You know, that would have been a tough one, because you lose to a really high RPI team, you know, kind of what they call now those quadrant, you know, three or four losses. And that would have been a tough, but they rallied on that one. Remy Martin played great. I think he's going to be the sixth man of the year this year. He kind of rallied them and they won that. And then, you know, I thought the SC game was the one that really, in the second line there that got him going, kind of got him over the hump. And then they played great. You know, they kind of looked like the old team of sorts, or the, you know, December Devils, you know, against UCLA. And then at the same time, you know, Arizona had their little bump, losing to Washington, and then looked awful, really, losing to UCLA last week. And then I thought they kind of, you know, you saw what could be with this team, with the U of A team, in that, especially the second half, but, you know, the SC game, I thought they played really well in that game.
Talking with Matt Muehlbach, former U of A guard, now Pac-12 Network analyst, Brad Sussmat. And again, the game is tomorrow night in Tempe. Let me go down the roster of U of A and I'm going to throw a couple names at you and just give me a feel about where they're at, why they're in the position they're in, so on and so forth. DeAndre Ayton's physicality, we all knew, the power inside. I did not think he'd be that good from 15 to 17 feet, in my humble opinion, offensively. What has struck you most about Ayton?
You know, sort of the combination of the size and the strength and the athleticism and the skill. I mean, normally you see a guy that's skilled at that size, but maybe, you know, he got an incredibly skilled player, Thomas Welsh from UCLA. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're 7 foot, you know, it's hard to be both, right? And then we see the athletic guys that may not have that type of skill. Like you just commented, from 15 feet, the footwork, you know, yep. We've seen him get to the free throw line and spin on guys. That combination is just, it just never happens. And that's why he's a once in a generation guy. You know, I thought, you know, the big thing for him, I think, is understanding that he can dominate, understanding that he can go out and get 25 and 20. And that's, you know, it's almost like a golfer. I remember a golfer telling me once, he played these easy courses. He was an up and coming pro. And he said, I've got to learn, you know, to shoot 62 and 63 and 64, like make that a comfortable thing, because, you know, you kind of grow up thinking, okay, par is pretty good. And I think that's for him. It's like understanding, hey, I can go out and get 28 and 20. You know, I'm that good, and having that kind of, like, you know, mindset and the ability to dominate.
But some of that, though, isn't it? You've got to, in your position as a guard when you played, you just got to keep feeding him. And there's times where I'm watching U of A, it's give him the ball. He has great inside position.
Right.
Just give him the ball. I don't need to see behind the back, between the legs, fall away three. I just don't. And there's times where it's just give him the ball. Am I wrong in that?
Yeah. No, I know. And I agree with you. I mean, and part of it is, we were talking about this a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I'm getting old to say this, but like, guards cannot feed the post anymore. It's bizarre.
Not true.
A simple post feed, you know, understanding the angle, understanding how to bounce it into a big. I remember just as a player, you know, how much we worked on that, you know, left hand, right hand, and the angles of it. And just, you see it today, it's they don't have, at least seemingly, don't have the same ability to do it. But you're right. I mean, get it to him more. Again, and part of that's him calling for it. But, yeah, they've got to look for him. I think they'll, you know, you almost have to have a rule. Just, he's got to touch it, or at least you're looking for him every possession. If he's double-teamed, you know, that's one thing.
If Raleigh Alkins doesn't play, U of A scuffles. Is it that simple? Is it really that simple when he's not on the floor? They struggle.
You know, you hate this. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is, because part of it is their bench hasn't, you know, some of the other freshmen haven't maybe developed, or maybe aren't on a pace that, you know, at least we all kind of thought they were. And we probably unfairly, you know, put them ahead of the pace that, you know, some of these guys naturally are going to be on. And we make them better than they are from day one. And so that bench hasn't really developed maybe what we thought it would be. And so when he's not there, they have to go, you know, the bench then becomes the starters. It's kind of a domino effect. And you know, I think he's probably their best defender, which is huge. And I'll tell you that he's their best offensive rebounder, too. He's the guy that gets, I've said this several times, he reminds me of a guy that I played with, Chris Mills, that could do it inside, outside, kind of a natural, you know, you get up and down. And I think tomorrow that's a game that he can play well in, an up and down game, you know, just getting buckets, you know, scrapping under the boards. He's really effective at doing that. And when he's shooting it well, you know, he shot it well against Washington State and they won by 40. He shot it well the other night against SC. They won easily. So he's kind of become for them that X factor, no question.
You brought it up a little bit earlier, and I'm going to ask you about this player because he is local from Corona del Sol, and that's Alex Barcelo. We have not seen him at all much here during the season. Does this surprise you? What do you think is going on there?
You know, I don't know, and I haven't done a U of A game in a few weeks, so I'm not sure if it's just, you know, just kind of the natural progression. And, you know, you always think about guys, you know, kind of figuring it out on defense, figuring it out on both sides of the ball. Because I liked him early. I mean, he's a fantastic shooter. I think he's got some you know, just some he's kind of precocious, you know, in his confidence and how he plays. So I'm not really sure what is going on. I know that I think he's going to be a good player. You know, as I said, I liked him in their early games. He does a lot of things for him. He was probably their best shooter in practice, you know, before the season, before the game started. So, you know, I think he's got the ability. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if he's not playing, if he hasn't been playing enough, you don't really see that happening, but you never know with a rivalry game, you know, playing at home.
Right.
Is, you know, where he's from. Maybe Sean utilizes him a little bit and, you know, understanding that and sees what he might bring to the table tomorrow.
We've done a deep dive with Matt Muehlbach on U of A. Let's switch it around then with a Pac-12 network analyst over to ASU. Again, I'm going to go simplistic here. If they hit the threes, they're living by the three, they're dying by the three. I have not seen enough of a consistent inside game, Matt, out of Romello White and others that have tried to be the inside game to make me believe that they can stay with Ayton tomorrow night. Are you seeing progress in that area, or are you seeing it as I see it, that there's really four guards with Remy coming off the bench, and if they don't hit their shots, they're pretty much done?
Yeah, I mean, those guards got to, they've got to light it up. They've got to play well. And it's not just threes, though. I think for them, you know, it's getting into the lane. It's getting to the free throw line. Free throw line has been, you know, that's been, for people that aren't familiar with ASU and they don't see them play a lot, that's the surprise, is you don't realize how much they get to the line when they're playing well. And when they spread you out, it is, you're picking your poison. You know, with a guy like Trey Holder, I mean, you go under the screen, you know, you double the screen. If you do, if you go under, he's going to shoot it and make it. You know, if you double that hedge on those screens, you know, then that's where the opening comes up for guys like Romello, you know, Lake and the big guys where they roll on that. Their guards are so good. I mean, they're really tough to stop. You know, I think the combination of the three seniors with Justice, you know, Evans and Holder are just, they're dynamic. And then you bring in Remy Martin. As I said, I think he's a sixth man. He's the energy guy for them. They've got to play well, you know. And I think, you know, teams have, you know, all these teams are being scouted, so
right.
They know
right.
Guys like Holder want to get to the line. You know, they know Evans can shoot it from 27, so they're making it tough on them. And you know, you look at the games they played well. I think they hit, you know, I think they hit 14 threes against Xavier, or 13. I think they hit, you know, 14 or 13 against Kansas. They were 9 of 18 against K-State. You know, they shot it well in those games. And again, part of the reason is you're worried as heck about them getting into the lane and getting to the free throw line. So you got to respect that. You know, there's Lorenzo Romar, now the assistant coach at U of A. I always thought he had a great quote. His quote was, you know, easy to scout, hard to guard, meaning you can see it on film. I know what they're going to do, but you get in the game, it's a lot quicker, and things happen way faster than you expect it to happen. I remember I played a guy, Kenny Anderson, you know, he was one of the greatest ball handlers of all time. I remember watching tape on him for the week before the game, and I could see what he was doing. I kind of understood where he was going, and then you get in the game, and you're like, dang, this guy's really good. Really, you know, he's unbelievable. I mean, it's just, you know, you're trying to guard him, and I knew what he was going to do, but it's a lot harder when you're in the middle of it. So,
hey, good visiting with you as always. Really good insight. I appreciate your time. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. Should be a fun one tomorrow.
You got it. There's Matt Muehlbach, Pac-12 Network analyst, former U of A guard. Good deep dive there on the game. Andy Stankiewicz in about 10 minutes with talk to the Lopes. We'll talk GCU as they open up their baseball season against 7th-ranked TCU, and Stanky doing a great job out there. That is on the other side in about 10 minutes. Sean White's in the news cycle. I'll tell you about that. And a few other things on my mind before we get out of here on a busy Wednesday. If you've not been over to the website today to check it out, sports360az.com, Eric put up a really good story yesterday, last night, on a top running back in the state going the JUCO route right here in our own backyard from a very familiar name to you U of A fans, by the way. You can check that out. Also, part of our sit down with Christian Kirk, that's over on the website right now. We are self-funded, which means without people saying we believe in you, our businesses believe in you, we are going to write you a check so you can keep doing this. It's been 6 years of being self-funded. We appreciate our partners, and that's who you're going to see next. Stay with us. So before we get out of here, a couple of other things. You saw during the break there, Phoenix Rising FC. Rising FC has a home match tonight against Colorado Rapids. And the keeper for the Rapids is Tim Howard from Team USA. I always like watching Tim Howard. So that is tonight. That is something that is here local that you can check out. It's good to have soccer here. They also have a match that's coming Saturday. Beyond that, the Olympics. I watched Sean White last night. And he gets his third gold medal. This is in the men's half pipe. He landed the 1440s, as they like to say. But I continue to be befuddled by the Olympics saying that we cannot have our skiing today because it is just too dangerous. I have yet to see Michaela Schifrin, but I've heard more about Michaela Schifrin than anybody else in this year's Olympics. And I don't know. Eric, have you been waiting to watch the downhill at all? Or is this one of those you want to see? I know you've been busy with other stuff, but have you watched any Olympics?
I've watched a little bit. And I do think it's interesting. They're having, due to the conditions, like you mentioned, with the high winds, it's wreaking havoc on a lot of these downhill events and some of the other events. But I am not completely into the Olympics yet, but I'm guessing the deeper it goes, I'll probably dive more into it. So
I'm into it. It's on every night after the Brad Sussmat Football AZ show over on Fox Sports Arizona, by the way.
Shameless plug.
Shameless. And Haley's hosting this week. They cancel her again because it's too gusty of wind and it's too dangerous for the competition.
Yep.
Well, guys, if you're going to ski and you're going to ski at the highest level, it can't always be just perfect, can it? I mean, don't you want part of that to be this? Or is it like saying the ice is melting or the ice isn't smooth enough? We want to make sure that's the optimal conditions for our athletes. We're worried about their safety. Look, I'm going to get my car today and I'm going to go down the freeway and I may get hit and killed. I don't know. But I'm still going to go do my thing. I'm not going to drive 150 miles an hour, maybe 149. I don't know. Same deal with this event. These are the Olympic Games. This is what everybody, this is what you train for. It's windy, tough.
Yeah, it's like, and you can relate to this, Brad, back in the day when I was a high school basketball player, not a standout, merely a high school basketball player. We went down to Casa Grande High School to play, and the lighting was so bad in the gym.
Sure.
But you just adapt to it. You know, like, okay, yeah, it's a little dark in the gym. It's going to be different than playing in most gyms around the state. But guess what? Deal with it.
The women's individual biathlon was postponed because of wind. And the weather also led officials to evacuate the Olympic part in the coastal city of Ginyang. I'm reading things here about the weather conditions. And look, it's really cold there. It's really cold. People get hurt, get so cold. But they're still out there doing it. So it's windy. Yeah, they may take off and they may crash and burn. Or is it just coaches and players saying, this is going to be too hard? Now, Sean White's deal, he got the half pipe done. But then this morning he decides to go on the Today Show because someone asked him yesterday about his off the I can't say field, a sexual misconduct lawsuit filed against him back in 2016. So a lawsuit that was filed on him 2 years ago, someone asked him about it yesterday, and he referred to it as gossip. So, of course, that did not go well because the lawsuit was filed against him. So he goes on the Today Show, has to go on the Today Show. And, of course, the Today Show, everybody's wrapped up in flags on the Today Show. You can't not go down the controversy aisle. And Today said there's a poor choice of words to describe such an sensitive subject, and I'm truly sorry. So you know that there's some PR person that knocked on Hotel Suite 718 last night and said, hey, we need a minute to talk about this. And they brought in a team of like 10 people. And here's what you're going to say tomorrow morning on the Today Show. That type of stuff just drives me nuts. And I see it all the time. Let's use us as a way to make sure that we do damage control. And that's our show for today. Tonight, there is soccer. Tonight, there's some college basketball. Oh, our heroes on the hardwood. The Suns play tonight. They played to end the first half of the season. Actually, the season ended the day it started. There's still another part to go. It's the All-Star break. They play tonight against Utah, who's won 10 in a row. Yeah, Utah lost Gordon Hayward, but somehow they figured out how to be really good. Our guys here, May 27th, 2010, the last time of a Suns playoff game. We'll see you tomorrow. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, things across all of GCU. If you go to the website, sports360az.com, you'll see Haley Stasiak doing a walkthrough at GCU Stadium, Brazel Field at GCU Ballpark. Brand spanking new. And Friday night, Andy Stankiewicz's team opens up against number 7 TCU, the head baseball coach, with us for a few minutes here on Talk to the Lopes this week. How are you, Coach?
Brad, I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No worries, Andy. Just a general feel about coming into Friday night's game. We've done the ballpark side. I know it's exciting. You've got to see what's on the field. It looks like on the surface you've got quite a squad coming in. Let's just talk about the overview from your view.
Well, I think we do. We have an older team back. A lot of juniors and some seniors that have obviously kind of been through it a little bit. They've played a lot of college baseball, not just here at GCU, but also summer ball. And so we feel like all those games and all those reps hopefully will help us be in a good spot this spring. But we do. They're older group. They're into it. You know, they're really want to be a great program, want to be a great team. So we're excited about this thing. You know, we got a lot out in front of us, but we feel like we're gonna be prepared.
Building a team, Andy, and from day one when you came in to where you are with your roster today, are you where you want to be, one? And two, what did you have to build? Is it building the middle of the infield? Is it building the rotation? You can say it's building the whole thing, but when you took over, what did you need to build in terms of on the field that now you look at it and say, Brad, I got this right?
Well, I think, I don't know that I got anything right, but, but I will say this. We knew when we got to Division I, you know, we started playing. We played the Texas Techs, we played the Kansas State, we went down to USC, and one of the things that we saw real quickly was we lacked, as a squad, physicality, you know, just size and strength. And so I think that was one of the areas that we felt we had to really notch up a bit in recruiting. And I think Coach Wallace, our recruiting coordinator, and Coach Dorman, our pitching coach, you know, have done a great job of just – we still have some little scrab nuts, which little ball players, which we all love. But at the same time, we knew that we had to get more physical. And I do feel like I think that hopefully over the last 3 years, our team has just gotten bigger and stronger. And that's part of it. You know, at Division I level to compete, you have to have the horses to do it. And so we do feel like that's come a long way. And so hopefully we'll be able to stay on that momentum and continue to recruit, you know, some bigger, stronger athletes.
Talking with Andy Stankiewicz, Talk to the Lopes. Locally, give the fans an idea. I could run up and down your roster, and that would not be very entertaining. So I'm looking for you on the entertainment value of the local players that you've brought in, and just give a thumbnail as to the ones that you think can make an impact for you this year.
Well, I think first off is Jake Wong. Mm-hmm. He's a Hamilton High School graduate. You know, he's in his junior season. He'll be our Friday night guy. He'll be pitching Friday night against TCU. And so he's a guy that just, again, he's a strong young man that just kind of at Hamilton pitched a bit there. You know, we just saw ability to get stronger and better, and he's done exactly that. He's had a great summer in the Cape Cod League last year, and he's one of the best relievers in the whole league. And so he's a guy that we feel is going to be one of our go-to guys. And locally, you know, you've got a kid right across the street from Alhambra High School. David Avitia, who's a catcher, and he's just a freshman, but we feel like he's going to be. We feel like he was the best catcher in the state. For sure, and possibly on the West Coast when we recruit him. Here's a guy that basically went to school, you know, less than a mile from campus. And so you talk about, you know, homegrown. So he's going to be a wonderful addition. You got Tyler Wyatt and Austin Bull and Zach Malice. Our roster is full of local boys. We really like to recruit the state of Arizona first and foremost, and then we'll get out into – you know, the Southwest and then the Vegas a little bit. We go up to the Northwest and to Washington, Seattle. But for the most part, we try to stay with the homegrown kids here in the state of Arizona.
And you flip it around over to California. Let's go out of state. Ian Evans comes in, and just talk about Ian and maybe some of the out of state players that fans can be looking forward to.
Well, Ian is a great story. He was a guy who played at Gateway Junior College, and Gateway 2 years ago went to the Division II Junior College World Series, and Ian didn't have a really too many options coming out of the World Series. And we knew he could hit, and there was a roster spot that a right-handed hitter that we felt like could help us. We got him late, and all he's done here since he's been here is just sit in the middle of our lineup and drive in big runs for us. So he's a great kid, just got great demeanor about him, just plays the game the right way. And so, but recruiting is interesting. You know, a lot of times you spend all this time chasing this player, that player. And sometimes your best players are guys that just kind of show up late, and you roll a dice on a little bit, and you're not really sure what you're going to get. And a lot of times those guys end up being the most impactful players in your program. So, but he'll be great. You've got Griffin Barnes from Southern California. He's the younger brother of Austin Barnes, catcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And Griffin will be sharing them in the catching duties with David. He's done a great job. We've got a couple kids from up in the Northwest. We've got Drew Zamuda from Boise, Idaho, big, tall, right-handed pitcher. We think's going to be able to pitch a lot of the freshmen. I've got a kid named Nick Hull, who's a right-handed pitcher from Washington. We think he's got as good a chance to be, as a freshman, one of our best freshmen ever in our program as far as on the mound. So, encouraged by him and what we've seen, you know, in the fall and early in the spring. And so another player to watch out is a kid named Quinn Cotton from Colorado, outfielder. He was the Alaska League Player of the Year last summer. Hmm. Big time pop, and, great kid. And, he didn't have a great year last year as a freshman, but, man, he went out and played summer ball and just tore it up. And so we're hoping that he can just kind of stay to that form and take it right in the spring.
Talking with Andy Stankiewicz, it is Talk to the Lopes every week, GCU Athletics Friday night, the opener against TCU. A couple other questions. In the ballpark itself, what has the impact been? Haley and yourself gave us a great tour that we saw. But from your point of view, the impact that you found, not just with recruiting players, but maybe, Andy, even players from the past are saying, wow, it's still Brazel, and it's still really, really a sweet spot to play, but now even more so. Just take us through that side of it.
Well, we just had the alumni game on Saturday, and it was one of the fun things, watching the guys come into the ballpark for the first time and just kind of, just stop at home plate and just look back and just say, wow, look at this beautiful stadium. And the cool thing is it's still called Brazel Field, as you know, at GCU Ballpark, and that was important to those guys. They were really thankful and encouraged that, you know, President Mueller and the administration, you know, kept Coach Brazel's name on the field. And so, but they're just in awe. They're excited. There's a big buzz opening night. We're going to honor all of the baseball alumni. They're going to get, you know, a little care package with some of the families. And just GCU does all of this stuff so well, and it's kind of nice. I don't have to worry about it as a coach. I can just obviously get the guys ready to play. And I know that the GCU marketing and promoting departments, all those folks, they're on it. They take care of our people really, really well. And so it's a great buzz, you know, I think, as you were saying. Now it's up to us as a baseball team to keep that buzz moving.
Yeah, no offense, but opening with TCU, I mean, come on. When you open a stadium, you're supposed to open with, like, I don't want to throw any names out there because I don't want to disparage other teams, but it's only the seventh-ranked team in the nation that's coming in on Friday night for the weekend. You got to work on those marketing people and the scheduling people and say, come on, guys, you're killing me here.
Yeah, and I just looked up, you know, I've been looking up their starting pitching rotation, and three guys that are as good as anybody in the country, and I got a reliever, a closer that I think he saved like over 20 games last year. So, and they're all back. But you know what, Brad, I think it's always been our approach here to really challenge ourselves and challenge myself as a coach and our coaching staff. I want to see TCU is as good as anybody, as you just stated. And so they're doing something really, really well there. And what better way for us as a program to see and find out and play them firsthand for three games. And so I think we can all learn from them, me included. And I think that I can, our players will, you know, we train them real hard. They get after it. And I think that they deserve an opportunity like this. And so it's only going to make us better. You know, I really believe that. I know it'll be some rough moments when you play great programs like TCU, but, I think our end goal is to get to a regional, right? And I know that if we get to a regional, we're going to be the four seed. That's just the way it's been in the WAC. Last 4 years, the WAC representative has been the four seed, and the four seed's playing the one, and the one has been the LSU, the UCLA, the Stanford. It's been those big-time programs. And so it's not going to do us any good. We need to play these guys. We need to play these types of programs so that way, with the hope and desire to get to a regional, we're prepared to get in the regional and make some noise in the regional. I don't want to get to a regional and just be done after two games. And so, so that's kind of the end goal, and that's kind of the motivation, you know, behind playing, you know, the TCUs and the Fullertons and San Diego, San Diego State, Cal Poly's. You know, this is what we got
to
do.
Yeah, a couple of U of A too. I mean, it's good to see. Last question, and this is about you. So I've seen you around since you're bumping in with a Diamondbacks uniform on, and you made the transition out of playing as a ball player in the major leagues over to the coaching side. What have you found to be the biggest adjustment going from ball player to coach?
I think as a player, you know, it's on you, and you know what you've got to do to help get yourself ready to play. I think that sometimes the challenge is getting the players to I think they understand what I'm saying, what I'm asking. I think sometimes there's still, I'm not because of trust factor, but there's still some hesitancy. And so I think getting the guys to understand that, hey man, we're in our corner. And, I think sometimes they think that the game was easy for me, but it wasn't. And so I just got to explain to them that it's a hard game. I got it. And just keep grinding it out, keep working hard. And I think it's just sometimes that there's a good look, some years gap in between us. And I think they forget that I understand that the game is very difficult. And so we're just trying to get them to stay positive. They're really tough on themselves. I think we just got to obviously help them stay strong mentally and feel good and be confident and go out there and do what we know they can do.
Yeah, fight through it. No, that's good stuff. Hey, I appreciate your time and visit. As always, good luck this year.
Brad, always a pleasure to be on. We'll see you this weekend, right?
I'm going to try to be there, actually, on Sunday. So I'm going to try.
Right.
I'm going to try. I'll be the guy yelling at you. I'll hold the sign up. Says, come on, coach.
You won't be the first one, so go for it.
See you later. Here's Andy Stankiewicz. Come on, coach. Get after it. That is Talk to the Lopes this week.